If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 669. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mountains and missions and ghost towns, beaches and tall trees and trains as we talk about the state parks of California. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk California. I'd like to welcome back to the show Jeff Ulfs, who is a retired National Park Ranger. He's been on the show before talking about Joshua Tree National Park and has come back to talk to us about some other parks. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I love listening to your programs, and it's great to be back.
And we're not talking national parks this time. What are we going to talk about?
Well, you know, you've had podcasts on Canada's UNESCO World Heritage Sites kind of as a group and some of the U.S. park system. We're going to talk about, of course, I'm biased because I'm a third-generation Californian, but probably the finest state park system in the country, and that's California State Park System, which preserves the diverse cultural and natural heritage of California. So basically, we're going to take a big tour of California.
Excellent. Well, I'm a first-generation resident of California, having moved here at a very, very young age, but I have some bias as well. And you mentioned UNESCO World Heritage Sites. There's one surprise coming up later because one of them is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. But how are we going to approach this? You had in mind we'd group these. We're not going to talk about all of them, right? Because how many are there?
There's 293 properties. We'll just put it that.
And you have been to all 293.
I have been to all 293, all 90 that no longer are state park properties, and I'll mention that real briefly in a bit. But I did want to kind of start out with something people may not actually realize is that the State Historic Landmark System in California, 1,097 State Historic Landmarks, are managed by the California State Park System.
I did not know that. Okay.
Well, actually, it's 1,055 officially. I say there's 1,097 because there's markers at two different sites, and there's a thematic theme where there's a 155.1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 with multiple sites for arts and stuff like that. But these are those bare historical markers you see along the highway, marking historical events and people, including Native American sites, the Spanish landings, Montgomery's first flight 20 years before Wright Brothers down in San Diego. So I just want to mention that the state park system also administers that program. They haven't published a book lately. There's still an available book out there up to about marker number 1020 that you can get. Tells you all about the markers and where they're located. So I just want to put in for the State Park Systems plug for that, managing that.
Okay. And for those people who don't know, it's usually a roadside stop and a paragraph or two that you can read about why this site is significant. So can't spend quite as much time there as you can for some of these other parks that we're going to talk about.
Right. And the other thing, too, is there's 90 places that are no longer in the state park system, including the very first California state park, Yosemite.
Oh, sure. Well, okay. We understand why that might not be in the state park system anymore. Okay.
But things like Seal Rock State Beach up at San Francisco went to Golden Gate, Squaw Valley is with the U.S. Forest Service, and Los Angeles or Olivera Street used to be a state park. It went to the city. To the city of L.A. So there's 90 of those out there that are just no longer in the system, but are definitely administered by others. Having said that, the state system is classified into 13 different areas: state parks, state beaches, state historic parks, the whole gamut there. And I thought we would take them kind of by themes and start at the northern part on the Oregon border and go all the way down to the southern border with Mexico.
Okay, and so we want to tell people at this point, pause, get a cold drink, get a comfortable chair, and then let's get going.
But let's start out briefly with one of the easiest ones, and that's they also have their six state museums the state parks have.
Oh, okay.
And most of them are in the state capitol, the state capitol itself museum. There's the California Indian Museum, which houses a wonderful collection of all the Native American heritage in the state. It's actually at another unit called Sutter's Fort, we'll talk about in a second.
Got it. Okay.
But they're actually building a new museum across the Sacramento River on the west side to house the Indian collection. Not sure when that's going to go, but you've got the California Indian Museum. And I think a lot of people have talked about the Railroad Museum.
Oh, I love the
Sacramento Railroad Museum.
Museum
is one of the best.
If you're a railroad fan at all, or willing to become a railroad fan, highly recommend it. We've got a post on the website that I'll link to about the California Railroad Museum, but it is not just a spectacular museum in terms of the depth of its collection, but also some of the historic, like the oldest steam engine from the California railroads and things like that. Great museum.
Absolutely. And a lot of these spaces we will probably mention, you've already got other podcasts out there on too. So one that most people aren't familiar with is the town of Locke, L-O-C-K-E, in the Delta below Sacramento.
Okay.
And the state parks has a museum there. It's kind of an old gold mining on the river port town, which Chinese influence. Not well heard of, but really worth a good stop. Outside Yosemite is the Mining Museum. And there you will find the 13-pound gold nugget.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's one of the largest, the ones that I know of, in the Mining Museum. And then down closer to L.A. in a town called Lancaster, just north of there, is the Antelope Valley Indian Museum. And that also has a unique collection of Indian artifacts. And actually, it's a pretty – architecturally, it's an old home. It's just – it's a wonderful-looking building.
Hmm. And Lancaster is some of the high desert country in California that – a lot of people aren't picturing when they're picturing California.
Yeah, our desert. And, you know, that's one great thing about California, too, is we got everything you want. I mean, we got the highest peak in the continental 48, the lowest place in the continent, the beaches, the mountains, and they're all represented in our California state park system. So that's what's kind of neat about it. Let's get into history, because I know we're both history buffs.
Okay.
And starting with the Native American history, we've got a couple sites in California. One is called Indian Grinding Rocks, and another called Wasama Roundhouse. And these are both outside of Yosemite. Indian Grinding Rocks are the bedrock mortars there. And then, of course, the Roundhouse is a reconstruction of a Native American roundhouse that's there. Down further south by Santa Barbara is the Chumash Painted Cave. And this is really a very small little park, but it's a cave that obviously has Chumash Native American paintings and you can climb up into and see. The one that's kind of hard to get to and has to be done by reservation is over by Tehachapi. And this is the pass between Bakersfield and the California desert. I'm going to get this wrong. I know it. Tomokahani Park. And it's a Native American site with petroglyphs, pictoglyphs up in the hills. And it's by tour guide only. You can't just drive up. There's no gate to drive up to. So consider that if you're ever passing between Las Vegas and Bakersfield. You're going right by it there on the 58.
I have done that route and knew nothing about it.
Spanish era, of course, California. Three of California's 21 coastal missions are represented inside the park system. And again, starting up north, we've got the Sonoma mission. Mm-hmm. And I think you might be familiar with
most of the missions.
And nearby, of course, is the Petaluma Adobe, which was General Vallejo's home. Mm-hmm. And of course, Vallejo also had part of the Sonoma mission there. Mm-hmm. Then closer to where you are, the Santa Cruz mission.
Okay.
And also just a little bit east of there is San Juan Bautista. Now, the mission itself is not in the state park system.
Okay.
But the town is, all the historic buildings.
Because the mission itself is still an active church, I suspect, is one of the reasons for that. But yeah, it's in an old western town, or at least that part of the town where the mission sits is got the old livery stable and a couple hotels and things. So I always used to love to go over there as a young kid and budding history buff. And also while you're at the mission, you'll see that they put it in a very unusual place, or very unfortunate in some ways. There's a hill that goes down from there. That is the San Andreas Fault. So you're right there where they built the mission about 10 feet from the fault. And even though they built it in the late 1700s, it's still there. So it's taken some damage during some of the earthquakes, but it's still around.
And one of my favorite things was the police chief of the town 30, 40 years ago, whatever it was, when I was there as a kid too, used to walk around in Western attire with a six shooter on his hip and just greet people. It was great. So the next stop going south is, of course, Monterey, California's first mm-hmm. capital. And all the historic buildings there, and I know you've done podcasts on that, so I won't dwell too much on that one.
We actually haven't done a podcast on Monterey. I'm very remiss since episode, I want to say like 3 or something like that. It goes way, way back. I need to do one again because it's a place that I happen to love. And on the new California tourism blog that I have, californiatravelmedia.com, I have a guide on Monterey Peninsula that features some of the history there, but not all of it. There's quite a lot there. So, but you're talking about the Colton Hall, for instance, where California's right. Constitution was made, the Custom House, Robert Louis Stevenson House, a number of the different Adobes.
First Theater.
Can't get in there anymore theater, unfortunately.
Huh. No, Spanish Landing, the first Presidio mm-hmm. Church Chapel.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much history in Monterey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's pretty nice looking place also. So big, big fan of Monterey the Peninsula.
Well, then the next mission going south, not quite the next mission, but the La Purisima mission, which is more down towards halfway between maybe Monterey and San Luis Obispo.
I can't picture which one that is. I suspect it has another name that I know it by. That's not the Mission San Antonio, is it?
No, that's another one.
Okay.
But there was a couple between San Luis Obispo and Soledad on that.
Got it.
And Presidio Santa Barbara. Downtown Santa Barbara.
Well, and you say the missions and the string of missions, we should say a little bit about this because I had to study this in fifth grade history here in California, so I've got to tell it because I had to learn it. But
what was your mission?
I probably did San Juan Bautista, I suspect. So he says, what was your mission?
San Buenaventura.
You have to study California missions in the section in school where you study the California history. And the California missions are where the first permanent settlements of the Spaniards as they come up from Baja California into Alta California. And they are a day's horse ride apart from each other in a string going from, in California, from San Diego, right there at the border, all the way up to Sonoma. There's a few sometimes that go inland or towards the coast or whatever, but there's always another one along that route, the route between the El Camino Real, the King's Highway that connected these. And so the friars under Junipero Serra, who is Saint Junipero Serra now, but a very controversial figure in terms of how the Native Americans were treated there, and I'll let you look up that, basically founded these missions to try and bring Christianity to the local indigenous population, but they also then became the center for the towns. So the Presidio in some places and the mission in many places became the kernel for where the towns developed. And there's a few of the missions now that aren't someplace where there's a town, but almost all of them are there's a town that built around them.
Just to digress even a little bit further, there's four asistencias attached to the missions. Those were the ranching properties that belonged to the mission. And there's four of those in California. And a lot of people also don't realize that I think it's three, but there are three Spanish missions in California over by Yuma, Arizona on the California side.
I didn't know that. I wondered why you said the coastal ones. Okay.
Huh. That's right, because there's actually other missions in California, Spanish missions, and those were over, I think most of them are pretty much in ruins right now, if you can even find one of them. I don't think it even exists. It's been plowed under, but there was three over on the California side across the river from Yuma.
Interesting.
So El Presidio of Santa Barbara, which is the Presidios with the towns, I think that's where you're kind of leading into.
Well, Presidios were the forts. And so a Presidio had soldiers in it, and not all of the missions had a Presidio, but Monterey certainly did, San Francisco did, and some of the other major towns would have had a Presidio.
And Santa Barbara being one of them. Mm-hmm. And then further south is actually a battlefield site, the San Pasqual Battlefield, which is north of San Diego, and that was an actual battlefield site from the Mexican-American War. That's in the state park system. And the last Spanish-era one, of course, is Old Town San Diego, which is in and of itself is a wonderful place to visit. Yeah. It really is.
Not just for the Mexican food, although you should go for that, you should go for that alone. But it is this well-preserved portion of San Diego in terms of the old Spanish heritage there. Next to two interstates, so it's not hard to get there.
No. Then I think the next era would be the Gold Rush era.
Okay.
So a lot of sites in California represented in the state park system. Mm-hmm. One starting up north, Shasta. The gold mining town of Shasta is a well-preserved town just west of Redding. Mm-hmm. There is, coming further south along the Sierras, Pluma Chirica and the Empire Mine, the Malakoff Diggings are all gold mining sites north of Sacramento in the Sierra Nevadas. Some of them still have the old mill sites like the Mohawk Mill at Pluma Chirica. Mm-hmm. Excellent places to go learn about the gold mining era in California.
And when you say a mill, that'd be a stamp mill, I'm guessing?
It'd be a stamp mill.
Okay,
correct.
So someplace they would crush the rock then to get at the gold inside. Okay.
Absolutely. And of course, the biggest one of all, Marshall Gold Discovery, which is where Marshall founded gold on the river for Sutter.
Ooh, and so this is the one you said we would talk about later, which is Sutter's Mill.
Well, Sutter's Fort, actually.
Sutter's Fort, sorry.
But the Marshall Gold Discovery is actually the oldest property in the state park system. It was set aside in 1890. So it's kind of their oldest unit right now. Then you've had programs on Bodie, the wonderful historic Bodie mining
Love
town.
Bodie, yeah. And this is a ghost town kept in a state of, what is the
term
they use? Arrested decay, yes. So they don't let it fall down, but they don't repair it. And you can still see the school building. So there's an old gold mining town. In fact, I think they've just reopened the mine relatively recently, last I'd heard.
They reopened the mill, the stamp
the mill. Okay.
By escort, you can get a tour through there.
But you can still see the lessons on the desks in the school and the plates still on the table in some of the buildings covered with a layer of dust. And it's a fascinating place in the high desert area to the east of the Sierras, east of Yosemite, right next to Mono Lake. A beautiful place to go. I love taking photos in Bodie.
It's similar to Bodie and a little more accessible, and as a little more the store is open and things is Columbia, which is the old gold mining town by Sonora.
This year. Hadn't been there since I was a kid.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
A little more touristy.
And, of course, nearby is Railtown, 1897. Mm-hmm. If you haven't had a chance, you can actually – it's a state historic park where you can hop on a train and go for a train ride. Yep. And that's only maybe 10 miles away from Columbia. So
yeah, that's a great thing to do. I did those together. And in the Railtown, there's also a museum there where they have some of the historic trains because, obviously, they're still keeping them running there as well. That's worth a stop, although the museum is only open certain hours by a tour, and so check the hours before you go to Railtown.
And then the last one, and little known, is Placerita Canyon. Hmm. And what's special about Placerita Canyon, this is just north of Los Angeles, is the Oak of the Golden Dreams. And this is gold was actually found in California first in 1842. Huh. And that Oak of the Golden Dreams is still there. One of the Spanish friend of the landowner, a relative of the landowner, was snapping under the tree, and guess what he found? And that was in 1842 before 1849.
But that did not trigger the gold rush like the finding at Sutter's Fort.
Yeah, I don't think word got out on that one.
Smart.
Yeah. Then there could be, you might say, the military forts, just a couple of them in California. Fort Humboldt up by Eureka, where mm-hmm. young Captain Ulysses S. Grant mm-hmm. was stationed.
A very depressed young Captain Ulysses S. Grant, who quit the Army after he was stationed there and went back home and minded the store for a while.
There's a reason for that. Yeah. And I love Eureka. I went to Humboldt State, so I know the area very well. And but it's isolated up there and foggy.
It is, and you're talking and about rainy. An area of California that is a temperate rainforest. So it gets a little rain up there, very green, very beautiful area. But a little too far from home for him. But of course, this is before the railroad, too. So it's far from home when you're up there in the before the Civil War.
The next fort to mention is a Russian fort, Fort okay. Ross, mm-hmm. on the coast north of San Francisco. It's probably the furthest south Russian expansion settlement mm-hmm. with a Russian architecture and the church that's there. It's really a beautiful spot, but that's also on a coastal, windy, wet area, too.
Yeah, and if you didn't have to take California history there in fifth grade, you may not have known that the Russian trappers basically came down the coast from what was Kamchatka and the Bering Sea and Alaska and all the way down into Northern California, going after fur seals and otters and such.
The last fort then would be Fort Tejon, which is on what's called the Grapevine Pass. Mm-hmm. That's Interstate 5 going from Los Angeles north. What's nice there is they do a lot of military reenactments of cavalry. And most people also may not have known that the cavalry had a Camel Corps.
Yes. There was a movie about that, actually. Disney did a movie about that in the 70s, I want to say.
Yep. High Jolly was brought over to help train the camels, and the Camel Corps ended up in Fort Tejon, too, for a period of time. So a good place for stopping right there on the Grapevine Pass.
And I have to admit, I have seen the signs, and I have never stopped.
There you go.
And the movie was Homps, H-A-W-M-P-S.
I haven't seen that.
Look for that on Netflix sometime.
I'm going to go into the state capital itself, Sacramento, because mm-hmm. there's so much there. Old Town Sacramento, Old River Town, all the historic buildings that are there.
Which is where the Railroad Museum is.
Sutter's Fort, which was the home and fort of John Sutter. And, of course, also there I mentioned was the Indian Museum, right there mm-hmm. together. Most people don't realize the old Governor's Mansion and Leland Stanford of Railroad fame, his mansion, are both state historic parks for touring in downtown Sacramento. And a little bit further out from Sacramento is a town called Woodland. Mm-hmm. And the Woodland Opera House is a fully functional 19th century opera house. It's one of four left in the state. They do performances there. If you're into opera, got to check that one out. Some of the other historic places just in general in California, up north in Weaverville, is one called the Josh House, J-O-S-S.
Okay.
It's a Taoist temple, and it is gorgeous. It's well-preserved. It's over 100 years old. It's just a beautiful temple, but it's a little off the beaten track. The Jack London's home near Sonoma is in the state park system, the Rider. And I don't know if you're familiar with Marconi and Marconi wireless stations.
Yeah.
Well, his place on the coast by Point Reyes, the Marconi, is actually a conference center in the state park system. The state system also has a dairy ranch north of Santa Cruz called Wilder Ranch that's preserved.
A working dairy ranch?
It's interpreted. I don't know how. Okay. I haven't been there in years. I'm not sure how much, but the barns and the cows and the chickens are all still there. And I'm guessing it's still probably, obviously, to do the interpretation, they still have things going on there. The biggest one in California that everybody knows about next would be Hearst Castle. Yeah. Down on the Central Coast, which houses the largest collection of European antiquities in California. And it's Hearst's home, and it's beautiful. I remember as a kid, they used to have wild animals there, zebras.
And
stuff like that. So, yeah.
I didn't know they weren't there anymore, but.
They're gone.
Yeah, it's a monument to what money can buy. But it's beautiful. But this is somebody who would import whole ceilings from some church in Europe and then have his architect build a room around it, or it is interesting. And of course, this is William Randolph Hearst from the Yellow Journalism from the early 1900s.
Inland from Hearst Castle is a town called Allensworth, and it's Colonel Allensworth State Historic Park. It's in Tulare County, and it was a town totally financed and governed by African Americans. It's a little off the beaten path from Highway 99 and Highway 5 there in Tulare, but the town's preserved. and it was entirely an African-American community, and I highly suggest people take a chance to stop in and see that place. A couple of the last places now down in L.A., Will Rogers' home in Santa Monica is in the system.
Okay.
And a place called Watts Tower of Simon Rodilla. Watts Tower is probably the smallest state park unit. It's only 0.11 acres. But it's a cultural arts park that preserves the Watts Towers that were created by these artistic towers created by Simon Rodia. And last place, historically, most people are not familiar with, but California being a huge citrus state, the citrus industry is represented by the California Citrus State Historic Park in Riverside.
Okay.
And you can go there and see a working orange trees. And,
working orange trees.
Yeah. And making that orange juice. And I was there, you could pluck and, you know, take what you could with you. So hopefully they still allow that. But it's a neat little place that talks about the citrus industry, which was one of the huge money makers in California.
Sure.
California, of course, as we've said, has all sorts of things, including recreation. And not to be outdone are the lakes in California. So one of the smallest lakes that I've always liked is a place called Benbow Lake, up 101 going north of San Francisco to the Oregon border. And there's a really cute little historic inn right adjacent to it. I don't know if you've ever seen that going up to 101.
I have not.
But worth a stop and a stay at Benbow. Oroville, north of Sacramento, tallest earthen dam in the United States. Clear Lake, which is a huge natural lake. It's reported to be the oldest natural lake in North America. Now, I'm not saying not that. Okay. I've read it. somebody's going to have to, but Clear Lake, part of that is in the state park system. Other reservoirs include Folsom Lake, Johnny Cash fame, Folsom Prison right next door, Folsom Lake, San Luis Reservoir, south of where you live there on the pass between Monterey and the Central Valley. Millerton Lake at the foot of the Sierras actually used to be a National Park Service area before it was turned over to the state of California. So they go in both directions. There's other lakes, Castaic, Silverwood, Lake Paris in Southern California. One that people don't really think about too much is the Salton Sea in the deserts by Palm Springs.
Right.
It's south one of the Salton, hottest places to be, about 120 in the summer.
Yeah.
It's also one of the lowest places to be at about 230 feet below sea level. And it's supposed to be the largest lake in California. And I'm guessing that's somewhat natural, even though it was artificially created. And there are other lakes that have recreational areas. With lakes, we can't forget Lake Tahoe. There's so much to do around Lake Tahoe. Donner Memorial, which was the fateful campsite of the Donner Party traversing the Sierras. South of that is Sugar Pine Point, which has a opulent mansion. When people of money used to have mansions on Lake Tahoe as summer homes, the Hellman Mansion at Sugar Pine Point is worth seeing. South of that one is D.L. Bliss. It has the highest elevation lighthouse in the United States, the Rubicon Point Light. I'm guessing that's because it's on a lake. It's not technically what you think of when you think of coastal lighthouses. Which is probably why it gets its highest elevation.
Yeah, sure. It's not starting at sea level. So that's an unfair advantage.
Well, I guess ships crash on Lake Tahoe too. Emerald Bay, which is a beautiful blue-green water bay, and why they call it Emerald. It's a national natural landmark, as well as having a home of itself called Viking's Home, which is a Norwegian-designed estate. And the tourists were seeing of that. Then another little spot just south of there is Grover Hot Springs, which is a natural hot springs that you can go soak in as part of the state parks. A lot of rivers in California are represented in the system, including the South Yuba, the Auburn for rafting, Sacramento, both by Bidwell and Colusa. Stanislaus is represented at the Caswell Memorial. The Merced is represented by the Hatfield and McConnell. And then one that I don't think a lot of people go to is on the Colorado River. It's also part of the gold mining era, but Picacho State Recreation Area. It's just north of Yuma. It's a dirt road to get up. You follow the Colorado River. Picacho has a peak there, some of the gold mining diggings, but it's really pleasant state park on the Colorado River. Actually, the only state park on the Colorado River.
Okay.
Recreational-wise, the last thing would be the state vehicle recreation areas. These are nine areas in California where you can off-highway vehicle recreate your dirt bikes, your dune buggies, your sand rails. Everything up north from Prairie City by Sacramento, Hollister Hills, which is down by where you live. Pismo Beach has Oceana Dunes, which is an ocean sand dune. And the newest park and the system actually is in the desert side, pretty much right on top of where Ridgecrest just had their 7.1 earthquake this last I did feel.
Right.
It's called Onyx Ranch. Down by the Mexican border, next to Anza Borrego State Park, is Ocotillo Wells. And what I like about Ocotillo Wells is they got a place there called a pumpkin patch. Okay. And that's these conglomerate rocks that are on the – I'm not even sure if that's the correct term is conglomerate, but they're right there. They look like pumpkins all over the desert floor. And it's really a neat place to go visit. I want to give a special mention just for you to a state recreational area called Candlestick Point.
Okay.
Which should have some significance to you.
It does indeed.
So that's the shoreline there, the San Francisco Bay, where the Giants used to play at Candlestick Park.
Yes, I've spent many a cold evening in Candlestick Point.
I thought you would like that one. So let's get on to the final group, which is basically the natural areas. Mm-hmm. 1/3 of California's coastline is in the state park system, from Pelican State Beach up on the Oregon border, mm-hmm. south to Borderfield State Beach and the Mexican border. Mm-hmm. There's at least 70 different beach properties. I'm going to just kind of highlight a couple of them. Starting up north, Humboldt Lagoons. These are lagoons separated from the ocean by the beach itself. Patrick's Point is a wonderful little state park, Patrick's Point being the primary point there, and the walk around the point and the trails there. South of there, Sinkione Wilderness. This is really hard to get to. It is a remote one-lane/two-lane road out to the ocean up in Northern California there. It's considered the remotest and probably wettest, with about 100 inches of rain a year. You can only get to, I think it's Bear Gulch, which is where the road ends, and from there it's all wilderness to get into the park by backpacking. McCarricker, which is at Fort Bragg, it has the glass beach, which has sea glass, which is basically historic dumping in the ocean that's been that's been turned around
it's
a bit to turn into sea glass.
Our trash and making it into something interesting.
The art forms that are made from that. South of that is Schooner Gulch, which has one called a bowling ball beach. And here's the word I was looking for, concretions. These are the round rock things. Yeah. Like
I've seen pictures of
the
bowling
ball
beach.
Yeah. Half Moon Bay, just over the hill from where you are. Mm-hmm. Further south, Natural Bridges in Santa Cruz. What's neat about Natural Bridges is the monarch butterflies return every year there.
Oh, I didn't realize they had a monarch butterfly grove at Natural Bridges. Interesting.
Well, that's they come back to you.
Okay.
Well, or at least one of the places. So,
sure.
And of course, south of that is Seacliff. And what's interesting about Seacliff is there's a cement ship that used to be a pier there. It's the old SS Palo Alto, which is a World War I oil tanker that never really saw any use. And it was salvaged. It was made totally of concrete, and they put it there for a pier for a dance hall and stuff like that. Well, it's in total ruins now, but it's kind of neat to see off there.
Yeah, it was intact for years, and that's the beach where I would have learned to body surf. That's one of the nicer beaches in this area. Still chilly because you're still in Northern California, but a beautiful beach.
And that's where I interned, New Brighton and Seacliff beaches. Okay. During my college, I spent an internship there. Mm-hmm. Back down towards your Monterey, and outside of Monterey is the Sylmar State Beach, which also has a conference grounds. Point Lobos, just south of Monterey, has the Whaling Museum. I don't know if you've been into that or not.
Point Lobos has got to be one of my favorite state parks. It is usually crowded these days, and if you don't get there early, you're going to be parking out on Highway 1 and walking in. But it is stunningly beautiful.
And south of that is Julia Pfeiffer Burns, or Big Sur, the Big Sur coastline there on Highway 1. And most people don't stop at, but there's a little one just south there called Limekiln State Park, which has ruins of an old lime kiln production there.
Interesting. Well, and Andrew Malera State Park there opposite the road opposite Highway 1 from Pfeiffer Big Sur is also very nice.
Yep.
And that's on the beach.
Down closer to San Luis Obispo, you've got Cayucas. And if you've not been to the state beach, it's just a quaint little seaside town with its historic buildings and just a strip of state beach there that is really wonderful. It'd be right just south of Hearst Castle. So a good place to possibly have lunch there. And then for those that are familiar driving the 101, Highway 101, north and south, once you going south, leaving San Luis Obispo and coming down to just north of Santa Barbara, as soon as you get to that little pass there and you turn, there's the ocean in front of you. That's Gaviota State Beach, where the 101 reconnects with the Pacific or leaves the Pacific, depending which way you're going. South of Santa Barbara is Carpinteria State Beach. And This one's interesting because of the oil. It's a tar beach.
It is that. Had a friend who used to summer there, so I have taken oil off the bottom of my feet with lighter fluid before at Carpinteria. Other than that, yeah, it's very pretty.
It's kind of unique. And where you might be standing, you think is on land. When you pull your foot up, it's going to have tar underneath. So my caution warning there is be careful.
Well, and the one you skip just a little further north is Morro Bay State Park there with the great big Morro Rock. Also a great place. I've got an article that talks about the Central Coast. Great place for sea kayaking in the very secluded bay, very sheltered bay there behind Morro Rock, which is a great big rock on the coast of California.
No, you're right, because that's a great segue to the next one, because the other rocks that are sticking out is Point Magoo, which is between Ventura and Los Angeles, and Point Doom, which are two big granite rocks sticking out there on the coastline that you can hike around. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Santa Monica State Beach is well known. It's the end of Route 66. One that people may not be too aware of is Dockweiler State Beach.
I do not know this.
What's great about this one is you sit under the departure path of LAX.
Now, okay.
But yeah, you sit there, you're sitting there on the beach, and the jets are just taking off pretty much right over your head. It's a rather unique beach to be at, and particularly if you're in aviation, it's a good place to spot planes. Mm-hmm. Huntington State Beach, obviously Surf City, and it's famous for the surfing capital in California. And the last one I'll mention is Crystal Cove down in Orange County. And this is a state park that has a beachfront cottage community that was developed in the 30s, and you can actually rent these places out and stay in them for periods of time. It's just a cute, unique little artistic 30s ramshackle put together beach driftwood houses. Being coastal, can't not mention, but lighthouses in the state park system has Point Cabrillo up at Mendocino, Point Montera in Pigeon Point in San Mateo, Lighthouse Field there in Santa Cruz, and of course, Point Sur at Big Sur. Mm-hmm. Also in the system are various marine reserves where you can go snorkeling or scuba diving from a couple in the Bay Area at Albany and Emeryville down to just south of Hearst Castle is the Cambria State Marine Park. It's the only state marine park we have.
Okay.
So let's take a look at some of the scenic parks starting up north again. Castle Craigs, Granite Spires on the side of Interstate 5 just before you get to Oregon. Further east from that one is Ajumaui Lava Springs. Now, what's interesting about this state park is the only way you can get to it is by boating into it.
Huh.
There are no public roads into this state park. So everybody boats over there, camps, and you've got these springs coming out of the lava because it's right next to Mount Shasta. Okay. And the views of Shasta and Lassen are spectacular from there. And just down the road is MacArthur Burney Falls, which is famous for its falls, very picturesque waterfalls. Angel Island in the Bay Area, formerly National Park Service administered. The entire island talks about the Native American heritage to the military, to an immigration station that was there.
The Western Ellis Island, but very different because it was predominantly Asian immigrants and therefore not as welcome and closed for some period of time.
Right.
I mean, closed to immigration. We were completely closed as a country to immigration to Asia for a while.
South of where you are, Castle Rock, which is a sculptured sandstone.
Yeah, very close.
What's neat about that? Yeah. They have the skyline to the sea trail, so it goes from there through Big Basin all the way to the sea, and I'll mention Big Basin here in a second. Mona Lake Tufa. We talked about Mona Lake over by Bodie earlier. The tufa columns that are there.
It's calcium carbonate, I think, predominantly, and its structure's 2-3 times my height sticking out of the lake there.
Down Southern California, Red Rock Canyon, not to be confused with the Red Rock Canyon out of Las Vegas, but California has its own Red Rock Canyon, which I'm sure is also just shaking next to Ridgecrest. Saddleback Butte. This is kind of out of Lancaster area there, Palmdale area. What's interesting is it used to be called Joshua Tree State Park. And they changed the name because it got too confusing with Joshua Tree National Park. So it's now called Saddleback Butte because of the butte that's also there. But it also has the Joshua Trees in it, too. Malibu Creek State Park, famous for movie sets such as MASH. And if I'm not mistaken, I heard that may have gotten impacted by the last fires last summer.
I would not be surprised if you're in that area.
Yeah. Almost down by the border, Cuyamaca Rancho, which is the Laguna Mountains between San Diego and the Anza Borrego Desert. And, of course, Anza Borrego Desert. It's California's largest park at over 600,000 acres. It's also, again, one of the hottest at 120 a summer. It's also the driest, Apparently, it only receives about 2 inches a year. It's not only famous for the desert, but it has the desert bighorn sheep. And it was just became the first international dark sky community in California. And I should mention that the Pacific Crest Trail, which is the hiking trail that goes from Mexico to Canada, spans about 2,650 miles, goes right through Anza Borrego Desert State Park.
Interesting. And we do actually have an episode on the Pacific Crest Trail if you go way, way back in the archives.
Now, California San Andreas Fault. It's represented by Tamales Bay, north of San Francisco, and then a little one called Indio Palms next to Palm Springs.
Okay.
And you can actually go out there and walk in the San Andreas Fault, at least on the Indio Palms. I think Tamales Bay is basically all water at that point where it comes to land. So mountains. California's full of mountains. Sutter Buttes, just north of Sacramento, has a volcanic plug, and it is stated that it's the smallest mountain range in the world.
It's not shortest.
No, smallest mountain range in the world. I'm just reporting what I've read.
I don't know what that means exactly. Okay.
That's basically a volcanic plug.
Got it. Okay.
Mount St. Helena over above Sonoma there was Robert Louis Stevenson State Park where he had his honeymoon cabin.
Beautiful spot.
Beautiful spot. Mount Tamalpais on the north part of the San Francisco Bay and Mount Diablo on the east part of the San Francisco Bay, both giving you beautiful views.
Great views of the bay, yeah.
Of the bay, yeah. And even Mount Diablo, you can look at the Central Valley all the way over to the Sierras.
Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor, and that's mytravelcreditcard.com. I think it's clear that if you've been listening to Amateur Traveler that I love travel, but I don't love paying for travel, or at least I don't love paying extra for travel. That's why each day I help pay for my travel just by buying my groceries, my gas, and my gadgets. For a number of years now, my wife and I have used travel credit cards for our daily expenses. Then every year, we reap the rewards by using the points we earn to pay for airline tickets and hotel rooms. We get extra benefits along the way, like airline credit cards that let us waive luggage fees and hotel credit cards that give us a free night a year. Travel cards we use let us avoid foreign transaction fees when we travel overseas, which also saves us money. We pay these cards off every single month, and that's the smart thing to do. That way, other people are paying for our travel instead of the other way around. If you don't know where to get started, you can go to mytravelcreditcard.com, and we've picked a small number of great travel credit cards that I personally recommend, including the best starter card. Right now, the card I reach for first is from Chase, but if I find better cards, then we'll update mytravelcreditcard.com with our best picks. So check it out and let me know where you go with your points.
South of you again, Fremont Peak. Fremont raised the American flag there in 1846 when he was passing through. Providence Mountains out here in the California desert, mostly known for Mitchell Caverns, which is one of the few caverns in the state park system. Hmm. And you have one of my favorite places these days, and I'll be there tomorrow, Mount San Jacinto State Park. Could be the coldest state park at 12 degrees below zero in 1972. It's also the highest state park at 10,804. And the easiest way to get there is to take the Palm Springs tram from Palm Springs straight up to the mountain station, and you're in the state park. And I will give a disclaimer that I'm one of the directors on the tram authority there by the governor, so I won't put in a plug for that.
Fair enough.
Palomar Mountain, just north of San Diego, has the Palomar Mountain Telescope.
Right, sure.
So last couple things in the state park system are the plants and animals, just to mention a few, obviously the redwoods.
Okay, well, I was wondering if you're going to get there. Okay.
Yeah, starting with Jedediah Smith, which is the northernmost, the Del Norte Coast, Prairie Creek Redwoods up in Humboldt. What's great about Prairie Creek is the elk herd that's there. Just driving up the road and there's elk grazing out in the meadows. Humboldt Redwood State Park has, I believe, if it's not there, it's in Redwood National Park, which is there next to each other, has a tallest tree at 369 feet. One not so familiar is Standish Hickey.
I am not familiar with Standish Hickey.
Off the 101 as you go. No, it's just out of Leggett, California. And the reason why I want to mention that is because Standish is named after the family. It's Miles Standish.
Miles Standish, yeah.
Yep. Family donated the land. And what's interesting about that is one of my dear friends just retired as a California State Park Ranger. Give a shout out. I think he's the 42nd Miles Standish. And he's a direct descendant from Miles Standish, and he just retired as a State Park Ranger. He was a ranger there next to you at Castle Rocks.
Okay.
So a kind of a shout out to my buddy Miles. Calaveras Big Trees, which is over in the Sierras, and this is the most, I believe, the most northern sequoia grove. So the sequoia redwood trees are a different species than the coastal redwood trees.
Mm-hmm. The sequoia being the largest trees in the world and the coastal redwoods being the tallest.
And largest meaning massive body.
Massive body. And we also have the, well, so this one is a little more controversial. I understand the oldest trees in the world.
Now, that depends on, you're talking about bristlecone pines?
I was talking about bristlecone pines, I was.
Well, they're not in the state park system, believe it or not.
I was looking, okay.
I wasn't going to cover them, but they are in Inyo National Park, the white cone bristle, Methuselah, the oldest one there. But actually, not the oldest living thing in the world. And that's not in the state park system either, but the creosote plant grows outward in rings, kind of, I mean, circular things. And so their root system coming from the same root system, they've actually got one, I lost my train on to what it was called, but it's out in the Mojave Desert by Lucerne Valley, and it's considered to be the oldest living thing.
Interesting.
But back to the redwoods, though, can't miss out on next to you, Portola, and then south of that, Big Basin. Mm-hmm. Big Basin Redwood State Park is one of the crown jewels in the state park system. It's the oldest state park officially. It was established in 1902, and it is the Redwood State Park to go visit. Henry Cowell next door to it.
That is actually my favorite. Big Basin is wonderful. I agree with you. It's a lot harder to get into. It's not right off the highway like Henry Cowell is. And what I would skip, and people, I get in trouble with this, is in San Francisco, people talk about the U.S. park, Muir Woods, north of San Francisco. I would rather do either of the two that Jeff is talking about here down by Santa Cruz, either Big Basin or Henry Cowell. You're going to get much less crowds and just as beautiful trees.
And size-wise, they're bigger parks. So you've actually got more places you can go to. Muir Woods is pretty confined with, I guess, shuttle bus systems now.
Which is good. It's they're definitely making some positive changes there, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up camping. I live like where I grew up, and Big Basin was the scout weekend once a year, the Big Basin. Just a little bit south of that is the Forest of Nicene Marks out of Santa Cruz, and that was the epicenter of the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake, where your Giants were playing the Cross Bay?
The A's, yep.
Yeah, but that's the epicenter for that. Plants, just California-specific plants, azaleas are up in the Azalea State Reserve by Arcata up in Humboldt County. On the Mendocino Coast, you have Jug Handle, which has these pygmy forest dwarf cypress and pines, which are dwarf because of the marine effect. They're just stunted versions. Further on the Sonoma Coast is the rhododendrons, the Cruz, K-R-U-S-E, Rhododendron Park. Down by San Luis Obispo, they have a park dedicated to the coast live oaks, the Los Osos Oaks. Okay. And we can't forget about the Antelope Valley California Poppy Preserve. Now, if anybody was watching, and this is the spring of 2019, what I'm talking about here, just a few months ago, the blooms, the desert blooms, this was the place to go see California poppies in bloom. And I do not recommend as one visitor that you land your helicopter in the middle of it to see the blooms. So the final plant for California varieties are the Torrey Pines.
And before you get to the Torrey Pines, before we leave the redwoods, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that one of the state parks, that was not entirely correct, three of the state parks, but all redwood state parks, and they're Del Norte, Jedediah Smith, and Prairie Creek are part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site along with Redwood National Park. So all they're up in way, way north on the coast in California and the coastal redwoods there. So that is a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
And side note, I was there for the dedication. I was going to school at Humboldt State, and I was at Lady Bird Johnson Grove when they did the dedication of the World Heritage Site. So that's always been a special memory to me, too. Uh-huh. Torrey Pines, probably the country's rarest pine, is located on just north of the city of San Diego on the coast at Torrey Pines State Reserve. And the only other place in the world is on Santa Rosa Island, part of the Channel Islands off the coast. Got to conclude with animals. Two of the animals in California, elephant seals.
Yep.
And in Nuevo State Reserve, and there's other places in California, but that's the prime place to go view the elephant seals. And the Tule Elks, we kind of mentioned them up at Prairie Creek, but there's actually a Tule Elk State Reserve in the Central Valley out of Bakersfield.
Well, the other place I would say for elephant seals is, I was surprised, not a state park, but that is the Elephant Seal Beach just north of Hearst Castle.
Yeah, BLM.
BLM.
Has that as part of the California Coastal National Monument. So there's just so much to see and do in California. I know we're running short here.
We went long just a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, I know we did. But California is such a diverse place with culture. I mean, it's just a mini USA with cultures and things like that. I just want to say, always check open times of the parks. Most of the parks are going to have day use fees or charge for vehicle day use only. There's generally no charge for walking or biking into the parks. The historical parks or museums will probably charge a day use fee. And most of these things range between $5 and $25. And there are many different annual and special passes that the state park system has. So if you're going to visit a bunch of them, check the prices of the ones you want to go see, and probably buying the pass will be cheaper. Camping at the parks, that's going to be a separate fee, and a lot of these parks we mentioned do have campgrounds. So
they can fill up, so look ahead.
Check out the websites for all the information on museum times, hours, things like that. Just come to California. There's so much to see and do here.
And, Jeff, if I force you to pick the most interesting historic park...
I'll go out and say Old Town Sacramento with the Railroad Museum.
Okay. I think that was the correct answer. The most surprising historic park.
Probably Lock, then, that little town I was telling you about on the... Because it's just... The town is separated from the river by a dike. So if that dike ever goes... This town is actually under... I don't want to say sea level, but it's definitely under river level.
Your favorite state beach?
I'd have to go with, just for sentimentality, New Brighton and Seacliff, because I first started working there.
Great answer. Incorrect. It's Point Lobos. But no, those are, I like all three of those beaches.
That was more sentimental than it really was.
And the prettiest spot in the state park system.
I'm not even going to answer that one, just because there's so many places. I mean, from Ajumaui to Castle Craig, so the Redwoods. And I've always been partial to the Redwood, so maybe I'll lean towards a Redwood Park. But there's just so much scenery. How can you put down the one?
The Redwood Parks, if you haven't seen the California Redwoods, I really do want to underline that, it's just a bunch of trees. But it is very beautiful, very scenic, very calm. Especially if you don't go to Muir Woods, which is the national park. And you end up in one of these on a trail in Big Basin, or even just the regular walking path in Henry Cole, or up in one of the three that are the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, it's worth seeing. It is definitely something that I would add to your bucket list if it's not there already. Excellent. One other piece of advice that people need to know before they go to California state parks.
Just always remember to carry plenty of water. I would say safety is the biggest thing, not only from the safety of exposure to the sun, to insects and things like that, but watch where you're going. Let people know. Take a compass. Tell people if you're going to go out on the trail. If you're staying at a hotel, let them know you're going out so you expect to be back by a certain time. It's just safety. And selfies are great, but watch how close you are to the cliff.
Yeah. Well, we just heard the stat come out of a medical study in India, which has had even bigger problems with selfies than we have. And the study said that based on the data over the last 7 years, your chance of being killed by a shark is less than a fifth of your chance of being killed while taking a selfie now. So
times, they are changing.
Yes, we know that the listeners of this show are too smart to do that. So be safe, come to California, and enjoy the state park system. And thank you so much, Jeff, for sharing with us your obvious love for the state park system. How else could you have gone to every single state park in the state? And thanks for coming.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
In news of the community, I heard from Jeff Ulfs recently, who was just the guest on this show. And Jeff said he enjoyed listening to the podcast we did recently on Lima, Peru. I wanted to add a couple of comments. Besides Cusco, a side trip could also be taken to the Nazca Lines and the Paracas National Reserve. I was surprised that the Covenant of San Francisco, which houses over 25,000 skeletons in the catacombs beneath the building, wasn't mentioned. You mentioned floral. I was amazed at all the beautiful landscape little corners or island city parks. Apparently, it's a competition among councilmen. Some were even supported by advertisers who had their names nicely landscaped into the park. One final mention should be the Museo de Oro, the gold museum, with its world-renowned collection of pre-Inca gold. Cheers, Jeff Ulfs. Thanks, Jeff. With that, we're going to end this All Jeff All the Time show. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget, if you need a travel credit card, to go to mytravelcreditcard.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.